ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you're changing a tyre on the side of a road, should passing drivers have to slow down to keep you safe? Well, they do in most parts of Australia, apart from two areas. You'll find out where in 1 minute. And you're also going to hear about the push to get everyone to slow down when a vehicle breaks down. G'day, I'm Jono Kendall. I'm broadcasting from Sale on Gunai Kurnai country in Gippsland, and I'll be with you on Australia-wide for the next few weeks. Also...
На такие вопросы предпочитаю не отвечать. Это традиционный мой ответ.
It's fair to say Vladimir Putin is a pretty divisive figure. He has a lot of critics, particularly over his invasion of Ukraine. But in one pocket of regional Australia, he's been congratulated. That person is on a representative body that usually deals with roads, rates and rubbish. More on that in 7 minutes. Victoria and Northern Territory are now the only jurisdictions in the country that don't require you to slow down when passing a broken down vehicle. Jeff Ames from the Royal Automobile Club of Victoria, or RACV, is worried about roadside assistance workers being killed or injured while working on a vehicle.
Our patrols and the members or the customers who are being serviced are often outside of the vehicle when it's being attended to. It is a risky place to be changing a tyre or servicing cars. The hard shoulders are minimal if they're in existence at all. So we think any opportunity we can get for motorists to observe lower speed limits in these situations would be beneficial to everybody. It's wise for the government to consider and pass this legislation and their request to lower the speed for 40Ks, which is in line with all the emergency services and escort vehicles at present.
Well, Glenn Yogi Kendall is a truck driver from Katanning in WA, 3.5 hours southeast of Perth. G'day, Yogi. Is it dangerous if drivers don't slow down when they pass a broken down vehicle?
That is extremely dangerous, you know. Like, yeah, so we had an incident there with my wife and my son. Car rolled over right on the Albany Highway. Amanda was first one on the scene. You do what you can. The car's still on its side. People are still trapped. So she got my then 16-year-old up on the car because he's fit and agile and young, trying to pull people out. And the people that were not slowing down is phenomenal. And how stupid it is. Well, there was trucks and cars passing, a person pulling people out of cars doing 100 kilometres an hour. Why? What on earth are you doing, and how dumb is your attitudes towards driving? If you cannot see what's going on, don't drive. Don't be in the seat of the vehicle if you can't see what's going on.
And so tell us a bit more about that incident. I mean, that sounds pretty scary, but what happened?
Amanda was first one on the scene. There was cars, three people trapped in the car. The car was on the side. So, you know, you're trying to get people out. It's that initial help mechanism that we still have. And then, so, yeah, Jack was young enough to sort of climb up there. And he's a paddle beater and he knows what he's doing. So he was up there pulling windows and getting people out. And then Amanda stood back as the truck went past her doing 100 k's an hour. And she's realising that Jack is extremely vulnerable there, that he has nowhere to go. He can't do anything at all, and people are not slowing down.
Do you think this should be uniform across Australia? Like, all states and territories should have a law around having to slow down if there is a car broken down or stopped on the side of the road?
Well, if there's a broken down car right on the edge where you can see an accident, at least drop 40. You know, come off 100, it's 110 zone where they were. So at least drop 40. I mean, the idea when the emergency services are there and we're going down to 40, That's a big drop, but maybe if it's drop 40. Or maybe people just really need to start paying attention. Like, this isn't, you know, you can't just sit in your little cocoon in your vehicle and just think, oh, this is all fantastic. Well, look at me go with my climate control and my heater on and my music on and my, you know, and this and that, and me telling you where to go and everything's right in the car. Pay attention to what's going on outside the vehicle. It's starting to get really, really out of control. And I don't know how that's not a thing. And I don't know how the common practice and the common courtesy of driving is not there anymore. If you see something on the side of the road, slow down, pay attention. And the car behind you, slow down, pay attention. Be aware of your surroundings. I've been pushing this for years, but I'm frustrated how people are not doing it, I'll give you the tip.
Yeah, and I know you clock up a lot of Ks. You've already been to Broome and, you know, the south of Western Australia, and you're in Melbourne right now. You do clock up a lot of Ks. But has there ever been a situation where you've had to pull over on the side of the road and you've been worried about your safety because cars aren't slowing down?
Yeah, so today I was getting set up to load, and I was in a back street, you know, over at Campbellfield in Melbourne, and just getting set up to load a truck today, and you're pulling your ramps out and doing a couple of straps up, and you just, you got one eye on the traffic, and it's only a 60 zone, but that's enough for cars to hit and kill me in a 60 zone, you know, and I'm trying to set up in the corner of a road and be out of the way so I can go in and load, so we're not holding up people when we go in and load. And people are just, I don't know whether they just, I think the mentality of drivers in the current form is they're not looking past the bonnet. You know, they don't know. And I, you know, we my dad years ago, boy, you got to read the play. You got to look in front. You cannot be consumed at the bonnet. You must be 100, 200 metres in front of you. So it happens for us. I cart machinery all over Australia. So I'm generally unloading and reloading either on properties or farms or laneways or roadways. We do a lot of road construction stuff. So you're on the corner of somewhere and you just, you know, I think a lot of the times you just run as hard and as fast as you can and hope that people can see you because you've got your indicators on and your high vis shirt on and, you know, the lights on and flashing lights and everything you need. But you just hope that people can. But I really think that people are not paying attention as much as they should be in the surrounds of their vehicle. But, you know, what do you classify as a broken down vehicle? It's someone that's lost sitting there with their four ways on, or someone that's, you know, changing a tyre on the edge of the fog line. Like, there should be just, we need to be pushing education and steering the future around the common road courtesy. Bring some of that etiquette back.
Glenn Yogi Kendall, a truck driver from Katanning in WA.
ABC Australia Wide.
It's a case of international politics blending with local politics, an attempt to move a vote of no confidence in a Western Australian councillor who made national headlines for his commentary around the Russian election has failed. Just before he was sworn in as a Town of Port Hedland councillor, Adrian McRae went to Russia to act as an independent election supervisor. He was on Russian TV calling the election transparent and then congratulating Vladimir Putin on the victory. Port Hedland Mayor Peter Carter moved a no-confidence motion in Councillor McRae last night, but it was voted down 6-3. Pilbara reporter Charlie McLean was at last night's meeting. G'day, Charlie. Why did the town of Port Hedland not support this vote of no confidence?
Yeah, well, this was quite an extraordinary council meeting. It ran for around 3 hours, and really, I think the result, which has surprised many, I think, was less an endorsement of Councillor McRae's controversial comments about the Russian election and more of a protest against the mayor of Port Hedland, Peter Carter, and sort of the way in which this motion came about. Councillors called this an unfair and insincere motion that was moved by the mayor without consulting the other members of the council. And I think many were actually persuaded by some of the arguments from Councillor McRae and others who spoke last night that, you know, he made these comments in his capacity as a private citizen, not as a councillor. He had won the election to be on the Port Hedland Council when he made his trip to Russia, but he hadn't been sworn in yet, and they believed there was a distinction there. But really what they would have wanted is for this matter to be dealt with privately, to have a discussion just between the councillors about whether or not, you know, these comments were appropriate and perhaps, you know, get him to rein in his commentary in the weeks and months going forward. And really they felt that by doing this sort of in a public forum like this, it's really just created more division in the town of Port Hedland, you know, which has already been quite set back by different controversies on the council. This was a big setback for Port Hedland Mayor Peter Carter, who felt very strongly that the council should distance themselves from Councillor McRae's commentary, and also took issue with comments Councillor McRae has made about Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong, about WA Premier Roger Cook. Here's a little bit about what Peter Carter had to say reflecting on last night's result.
Yeah, look, I think it's a sad day for the community of Ukraine. It's a sad day for our community, sad day for humanity. He put his case forward and all the councillors listened to it. We had a quite a large crowd in the gallery, and some councillors feel that he's doing okay. And I felt differently. That's why I put the motion of no confidence against him, because I think what he did was the wrong thing.
That's Port Hedland Mayor Peter Carter speaking at last night's council meeting. Hey, Charlie, what has Councillor McRae had to say about his trip to Russia and the council moving this vote of no confidence?
Well, Councillor McRae has made no apologies for the trip to Russia. And, you know, from the get-go, he considered this vote to be, you know, he called this a political move. He thinks that, you know, essentially it's the mayor trying to get rid of them, even though it is important to note that, you know, these votes of no confidence motions don't have any sort of legal basis. So there was no danger that he was going to be kicked off the council. But, you know, his perspective in this has been that he's simply, you know, an individual who's interested in politics. And he said, you know, he would have gone to any country to observe their election if he was asked. And, you know, he was also, you know, he wanted to reassure some people in the gallery that he doesn't, you know, see himself as supporting Russia. He doesn't see himself as supporting Ukraine at all, that he's against war, he's pro-peace, and he was, you know, simply interested to get a peek behind the curtain in how Russia's electoral system works. So here's a little bit about what Councillor McRae had to say about the no-confidence motion.
You know, when I was in Russia, I wasn't even on the council. I planned to go over there long before I decided to throw my hat in the ring to go on council or to run for council. So it's so ridiculous that I went to work as an official foreign observer in an election that, you know, I barely know anyone that wouldn't have done the same thing that I did to go and watch an election process that, you know, certainly is of interest on a global capacity. It was an honour to be asked. So I went over and, it's absurd. My crime here is congratulating the winner of an election that I witnessed.
That's Adrian McRae, a councillor on the town of Port Hedland Council. Last night, members of Port Hedland's Ukrainian community shared their thoughts on his comments about the Russian election. What did they say, Charlie?
Yeah, well, this was a council meeting that went for around 3 hours. There was a lot of lively debate. And as you said, we heard from members of Port Hedland's Ukrainian community who spoke very passionately about, you know, how they felt about hearing Councillor McRae's comments about Russia. And really, they said that they didn't recognize these comments at all as being in touch with reality. These were people who have lived in Ukraine. A lot of them came to Australia after 2014. And they said that really they've recognized in some of the rhetoric from Councillor McRae, you know, common narratives that they've called from the Kremlin, as they've called this propaganda. Really, they wanted, I guess, to set the record straight about the way elections work in Russia. You know, they said that there's a lot of intimidation, there's armed soldiers outside voting booths, and they wanted to be clear that this picture that Councillor McRae has painted of Russia does not align with their own experiences, and they wanted to really share that with the community of Port Hedland. Here's a little bit about what one woman named Svetlana had to say.
Triggers quite raw emotions. You cannot take anything at face value in Russia or USSR for that matter. The elections, say that this election was the most rigged election in Russian history. So it would have been good for Councillor McRae to seek various sources to check his opinions. And just from personal experience, you know, I lived enough in former USSR to understand how elections work. The election, you know, to vote yes was akin to a command, raise your hand, and if you don't, then there will be repercussions, you know, whether it is through your work, you know, through personal persecution, especially if you're Jewish, and in many other ways.
That's Svetlana, who was at the Town of Port Hedland Council meeting last night. Now, there's been a few recent scandals that have involved the Port Hedland Council. Do you think residents have lost a bit of faith in their council?
Oh, absolutely. I think the mood was certainly low as the hours ticked by. There were a few people who walked out and sort of, you know, muttered that they were fed up as they were walking out. And I think, you know, the important context here is this is a council that, you know, went into administration a couple of years ago. There's been a successful no-confidence motion against the mayor just in February this year. You add this scandal on top of that and people are very disillusioned. They don't see this council working and delivering outcomes for the people of Port Hedland. A lot of the members of the public gallery who spoke, you know, said really what they want to hear from their council is speaking about issues such as crime, they picked up as a big one, housing. Port Hedland, you know, has been named in consecutive reports from Domain as one of the most expensive regional towns in the country. These are the things that they want their council to be talking about. So there was a bit of disillusionment, I guess, that, you know, this was a 3-hour long meeting, much of which was spent debating geopolitics between Russia and Ukraine. You know, there's clearly a sense here that they want the council to become more unified. They want to see them work together, and they want to see an end to these, you know, bitter disagreements and entanglements between different councillors. You know, some of the councillors even apologised to members of the public gallery that this special meeting was even called in the first place. So the mood is low, and there's going to be a lot of work, I think, going forward for this council to win back the trust of their community.
Yeah, Charlie, thank you very much for that. Charlie McLean, ABC reporter, speaking about the Newport Headland councillor Adrian McRae saying the Russian election was transparent and congratulating Vladimir Putin.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
Hundreds of women have gathered in WA's Northern Kimberley as part of a women's camp focused on healing, learning and networking. Organised by the Kimberley Aboriginal Law and Culture Centre, the 3-day camp on Gooniyandi country in a remote area called Mimbi Caves, about 100 kilometres southeast of Fitzroy Crossing, included cultural activities, making sandals from tree bark, making bush medicine, traditional healing, and talks by experts, community members, and advocates about issues impacting Indigenous Kimberley women. Broome reporter Roseanne Maloney has the story.
In the heart of Gooniyandi country, nestled between mountain ranges, a space for women to gather and heal is taking hold. Coordinator Chantelle Murray says gathering is important to carry on traditions.
This women's camp is all around women's healing and knowledge transfer from old to young, you know, and getting that older ground roots activities back, how old people used to do their healing, you know, with mums and bubs and healing with going out on country for healing, you know, bush medicine and stuff.
2 years ago, the camp was held north of Broome. This time around, there's an even stronger focus on healing by connecting to culture.
You know, healing is the most important things within our family, and mothers, grandmothers and great-grandmothers are the ones that carry on that healing. They are the holder of the family, the holder of the household. It's very important that the knowledge is being transferred from generation to generation, because if we don't have that systems continually going, then that's where our culture get lost.
Kimberley Language Resource Centre chairperson and Bunuba woman Patsy Bedford held a talk on language, which she says is important for healing after a history of government policies weakening Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture by taking away language.
Language is part of healing. Our language holds our constitution. It gives us the value. You know, within our language we have skin groups, we have names. We're connected to the birds, we're connected to the flora and fauna through in how we talk.
She says young people need access to learning languages so they can be proud of their culture and heal, while government need to offer more support, including funding and opening more language centres.
It's called Target 16 in closing the gap. And the aim for that thing, what we want to do is try make them language more out there, and to make a more strong languages for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. Languages, it's the core of who we are. We've got to talk our language to make us stronger.
Workshops for medicine were also on the table, as Sherry Smiler taught people how to make ointment and soap.
Yeah, all over the Kimberley, there's a lot of pharmacy there. Yeah. It's good for everything, I think, yeah. I think I have the privilege, but I've learned from my grandparents and my mum and dad of passing it on, and it's a good healing medicine. We don't have to use the modern medicine, we've got bush medicine to use in our body and everything.
Talks were also held on domestic violence, challenges with youth crime, and support was offered. Kimberley Aboriginal Law and Culture Centre Chair Annette Coglow says healing women is about healing the foundation of the community.
They are the backbone of their community and their families, and see how they can be as supported with the problems that they're encountering in their community or their township, wherever.
Broome reporter Roseanne Maloney with that story.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
It's a species that I have been fighting for.
Growing up in the bush is such a special thing.
So when the rain does come, we've got a few numbers.
What
got
if
a...
it never come?
Put a feather in your cap.
ABC Radio.
Eastern quolls are carnivorous little marsupials known for their ability to hunt and catch prey. The animals covered in white spots are still found in Tasmania, but have been extinct on mainland Australia for more than 60 years, wiped out by foxes, cats and disease. But a $1 million 4-kilometre fence will give endangered eastern quolls a chance to regain a foothold on the Australian mainland. Romy Gilbert has the story from Jervis Bay on the New South Wales south coast. It's about 3 hours south of Sydney.
Known for its abundance of wildlife, crystal clear water and proud traditional custodianship, Booterie National Park at Jervis Bay is one of the nation's greatest treasures. Translating to Bay of Plenty in traditional Dirga language, Booterie National Park is managed by the Wreck Bay Aboriginal Community and Parks Australia and is a sanctuary for hundreds of native animals, even the endangered and the extinct. Park Conservation Manager Dr. Nick Dexter.
Booterie has a long history of translocating locally extinct species to the park. Your listeners may not be aware that we've lost quite a lot of our mammalian biodiversity in the southeast. So we're trying to restore it.
World Wildlife Fund is working with Parks Australia and traditional custodians to bring back the small carnivorous marsupial, eastern quoll, which has been extinct in the wild on the mainland since the 60s.
They're smaller than a cat, a bit cat-like, brown with white spots, and unfortunately they're now only found in Tasmania, and that's significant because Tasmania, there aren't any foxes.
A group of 19 eastern quolls have been reintroduced to Booterie National Park after a first rewilded population was killed by foxes 6 years ago. This time, things are expected to be different thanks to a $1 million fox-proof fence. WWF rewilding manager Rob Brewster.
Ever since we had an independent review done on the first eastern quoll pilot trial reintroduction at Booterie, which ultimately didn't result in the population persisting. And the feedback from that report was that, you know, we should try again, but we should, I guess, take some of the learnings from the trial that ran between 2018 and 2021 and apply them to future reintroduction. What we think we need is savvier quolls who have the ability to that know how to hunt and scavenge and potentially evade predators, even native predators like raptors and owls and snakes. We need secure source populations, our eastern quolls, and we think the best way to do that is behind a fence, and a fence would allow us to have some fairly large, stable populations of eastern quolls that we would then test beyond the fence at some later stage.
A 4-kilometre fence has been built around the 84-hectare Booterie Botanic Gardens and features a floppy umbrella top to ensure the quolls are unable to climb out and the foxes and cats unable to climb in.
But what we are doing is working in collaboration with other fenced safe havens to share quolls, to provide Booterie, to use Booterie as a source population to establish other populations.
Right.
And then we'll have what's called a metapopulation management approach, where we'll manage the genetics and the demographics of our quolls across multiple sites in New South Wales and Victoria. And the aim is to have many of these types of landscapes across the former range of the eastern quoll, and some of those landscapes will be suitable for beyond the fence. And then we can start moving those quolls back into the landscape beyond those fences.
For traditional custodian and Booterie Park manager George Brown, the reintroduction of quolls helps to not only restore nature, but also culture.
The quoll was here on the eastern coast, south coast of New South Wales for many, many years. And then in the 1920s, we've seen a reduction due to the introduction of the fox. And our people haven't seen the quoll. in their lifetime, including some of our elders. So from a community perspective and a traditional owner perspective, it's really important to have these reintroduced to country. But to hopefully, we've created this sanctuary at Bitterie National Park in our beautiful botanical gardens, the only Aboriginal-owned botanical gardens in the country, where they can thrive.
Romy Gilbert with that story from Jervis Bay on the New South Wales South Coast. And that's Australia Wide for this Tuesday. Thanks for your company. I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Good night.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.